If you really want the title for our message this morning, you can write it down as The Twin. The Twin. Now, twins are supposed to be alive, but these are not that kind. Will you turn to the book of Genesis, chapter 25, the 25th chapter of Genesis? And I suppose if I've given the title for the message, I ought to have a text, but it'll be a pretext. And I should leave it at that. But having whetted your appetite, I'll give you the word. The 24th verse of the 25th chapter of Genesis. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. This is speaking now of Esau and Jacob, the twins. For the past several Sundays, we have been seeking to understand more and more of what God means by fruit and what he means by the fruit of the Spirit. We have seen in our past studies that there is the works of the flesh, the old nature, but that which is likened to the new nature and that which comes out of the new nature is likened unto fruit. And really our lesson this morning is nothing but an illustration of this taken from the Old Testament. The differences between the old and the new nature in operation. We've already seen from chapter 24 that the twins were born to this couple. And now we go into the story of Esau. Now, you will understand, of course, that this story or these incidents take up far more of the references than we can turn up this morning. So you'll have to take my word for it, but from the 25th chapter on, you get the story of Esau and Jacob. Now, one of the outstanding features of this man Esau that we're looking into for the moment is the fact that he stole his birthright. So this is given to you in chapter 25, and it begins with verse 29. While you're looking up the reference, I'd like to tell you there is another story here which we're not going to deal with in detail. We may refer to it, but there is the story of these fond parents and the mess they made of it. Should I have said that? The partiality of father and mother towards one and the other helped to bring about, in part, the difference between these two boys. That's another story. Doesn't enter into our subject actually this morning. So we go back then to this verse 29. And Jacob sowed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said unto Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with some of thy red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore his name was called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. I'm pausing here for a moment so that Esau can make up his mind. The challenge has been given to him, give me this day, or sell me this day, thy birthright. After a little while, I'm sure Esau said, behold, I'm at the point to die. And what profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he swore unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils. This is nothing more or less than lentil soup, if you want to know. And so he sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. Can you imagine it? Well, beloved, people have sold their birthright for less than that. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus, Esau despised or thought lightly of his birth. Now, the birthright itself is something again. And according to the Companion Bible, it includes three things at least. It included the father's blessing and supremacy. It included a double portion, which later went to Joseph. And then in the third place, the domestic priesthood. Of course, afterwards, this domestic priesthood went to the firstborn of each family and was vested in Levi for the whole nation. So what we have here is something that was of intense value to those that lived in that day. But Esau had gone out into the field and he had evidently not been able to find what he wanted. He was a good hunter, but like many of today, came back without anything. He came back with a voracious appetite. He was hungry. So much so that he felt that he was on the point of dying. That's how concerned he was about it. And so it was quite an enticement. But just to break in for a moment on Jacob, you know, Jacob was smart. He wasn't going to give him a bowl of soup for nothing. Was he a Jew? Well, I don't know about that, but he was the seed of Abraham. And he was going to strike a bargain, and when they strike bargains, beloved, you better watch out. You know which end of the bargain they'll be on. All right? Now what happened? In this simple illustration of Esau, yes, we have man's character brought to life. And we would sum it up in our days that he was materialistic. He was for the things of the earth. He was for the things of pleasure. His hunting. His life out there in the desert and in the countryside. In the mountains. Tied him down, as it were, to this earth. Now there's something else that comes up in this man's life that also enters into the picture. Chapter 26, verses 34 and 35. Chapter 26, 34 and 35. Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and Rebekah. Now if you'll turn to chapter 28, 8 and 9, you get a comment on that. Chapter 28, 8 and 9. Now the background just here is that verse 6 says, when Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take him a wife from thence, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. And Jacob obeyed his father and his mother and was gone to Padan Aram. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael and took unto the wives which he had, Malala, and daughter of Ishmael, and Abraham's son, and sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife. And otherwise, this marrying of these two Hittite women had done out of a spirit of spite, out of spite, because of what the father had done in blessing Jacob, sending him off to seek a wife out of their own tribe according to the will of God, that Esau took the opposite view. So here again you've got something that describes in part at least his spirit, his attitude, his makeup. Many, many other things, but the time will not permit. But here's something else. In chapter 27, we find that he set out to kill his brother. You see, his brother, when we come to study Jacob, we see that he did two things to Esau that were so out of line that he was angry to the point that he was seeking to kill him. But there's one thing in his favor, and yet, when you look at this one thing in his favor, you realize the hand of God. And that is that there came a time when instead of killing his brother, he was reconciled to him. But this was nothing but the hand of God, as we shall see a little later. Now turning for a moment away from these two men, I see in these chapters, in chapter 27 particularly, a series of mistakes that are interesting, I feel. So we turn first of all to Genesis 27, verses 1 and 2. And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see he called Esau his eldest son and said unto him, my son? And he said unto him, Behold, here am I. And he said, Behold, now I am old, and I know not the day of my death. Now therefore I pray thee. And then he goes on to tell a little more about that incident, which is coming up later. Now, this is the mistake of Isaac. He felt he was old and he wasn't going to live very long. The truth of the matter is he lived 43 years after this. So there was a mistake. You see, he was going out really, at least he was sending Esau out, that he might bring home the venison that he loved, that he might provide a blessing. So he thought that he was at the end of his days. Chapter 27, verse 4. I'm sure this is wrong. Oh, wait a minute. And make me savory meat. This is still talking about the father, I think. Make me savory meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. That's the point I wanted to make. You see, he felt it wasn't long before he would be called home. So he wanted this last grand meal from his son, who loved to hunt, and he loved what he brought home. And so we have here Esau going out to do this very thing. Now, somewhere in that chapter, I got the wrong reference to Esau, but he made a mistake also. Whether it was in the marrying of these women, I just can't tell for the moment. But going to verse 44. Verse 44. I'm afraid what I've done is to have the wrong chapter here. But anyway, this was Rebecca's mistake. And she sent away her son. Maybe this is right. Yes, this is it. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, and arise, flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran, and tarry with him what? A few days until thy brother's fury turn away. What was the mistake she made? It wasn't a few days, it was 20 years before Jacob came back. He never did see him again. All that mother's care for her favorite son and the intrigue that was involved in it brought her nothing but sadness because she never did see Jacob again alive. So there's three mistakes, Isaac and Esau, and, or Jacob rather, and then Rebecca. Never saw them again. So now we turn to Jacob. And the very first thing that we read about him was this matter of the birthright. So we'll just go back to that for a moment in chapter 25 and see this man driving a hard bargain. Now, in his favor, it said this. We can say much in his favor concerning his insight into things, his understanding of things, but not the methods he employed to gain them. He understood and valued the birthright. He knew its blessing. He knew its spiritual content. He knew what it meant. He knew what was involved. And so, even though he knew that by birth and priority, it belonged to Esau, yet he valued it more than Esau himself. So here was the opportunity for him to seize the birthright. And evidently it was possible under those laws. You remember the law of Moses had not come along. This was under the code of Hammurabi, who was a heathen, but who was a very good lawgiver and lawmaker, and was in vogue from Genesis on, or from whenever Hammurabi came on the scene, until the law was given by Moses. And so this was quite in keeping with the customs of the time for him to be able to do this. But then again, you remember that when Jacob saw the blessing of this, well, of course, he was gratified. But then when the father sent Esau out for this venison that he might bless him before he died, you get the conniving mother coming in and suggesting a way that he could get that too. But you know, poor old Jacob, he was smart to a point. And he said to his mother, it's all right, Ma, but, you know, Esau's hairy, and I'm smooth. Even though my dad is blind, I'm not going to fool him. Unless something else can happen. Because I'll take care of it. I'll fix it. Can't you hear her? I'll fix it for you, son. Don't you worry about it. And so you remember she got this goat or this kid's skin and she put it on his arms and so forth. But there's one thing that they hadn't quite thought about. That was the idea that his voice. So when at last they had tricked the old dad, they went out and they fixed up this meal that he loved. They took him into him. Blind daddy said, this is what he said, and I'm going to ask you now if you'll turn to chapter 27. We'll pick it up on verse 14. And he went and fetched and brought them to his mother. His mother made savory meats as his father loved. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. Now there's more to that than appears in the reading. The head of the tribe, or the head of a family, and the firstborn, wore a special raiment. It was recognized by other people as being the head of the family or of the tribe later on. It was a raiment of renown, and that's what Rebekah brought out. Esau's robe, the goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and she put them upon Jacob, her younger son, and she put the skins of the kids upon the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck. And she gave him the savory meat and bread that she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came unto his father and says, my father, and he said, here am I, who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. Jacob, you're a liar. Right? And he said, here am I, who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me. Isaac said unto himself, how is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? And he said, because the Lord thy God hath brought it unto me. Jacob, you're a liar. And this time your lie has gone to such an extent that you've involved the Almighty God. Let's read on. And Isaac said unto his son, how is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? And he said, because the Lord thy God brought it unto me. Would you notice the Lord thy God? He doesn't claim him as his own. The Lord your God. Now then, and Isaac said unto Jacob, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not. The old man had his doubt. And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hand are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. Now notice, after having blessed him, he said in verse 24, out of thou, my very son Esau. And he said, I am. The third lie, or the reiteration of the lie before. So it was that the father had partaken of it, and therefore the blessing went to Jacob. So this is the second time that he had cheated his brother. One was by barter, the other was by fraud. What sort of a character is this man? If you want to know what the old nature is like, this is the picture. This is it. Now the tragedy of Jacob is this, that his sights were on the good thing. He was following through from Abraham, in thee and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. He knew the advantage of these things. But in order to procure them for himself, number one first, you know, that's what he did. Now as a result of that, you remember he had to leave home. We started on that this morning a little earlier. And so now we get into that story where he leaves home, and we had that in our lesson this morning. Now, I want to just turn to that, because this is the great thing. Chapter 28 and verse 10, and Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. And you remember that the first night out, the first night away from home, is alone in a great wilderness or a desert. Takes this stone and uses it for a pillow. Whilst he sleeps, he has this dream in the which he was told these things. And I want you to just look for a moment at verse 14. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now that's the very thing that we're interested in, and that Jacob was interested in, but now God has promised it to him, and yet it should have been by birth Esau. But he had sold his birthright, he had despised it, and God had recognized it, and says to Jacob, it's in your seed that this family of the earth shall be blessed. And furthermore, and behold, I am with thee and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. Now, listen, this is the first night out, but God says, I'll be with you and bring you back. Now, this is important because of what follows. Of course, Jacob didn't know what was going to happen, but we know, we've read the story. But at this time out there, that first night away from home, he finds God speaking to him, and he said, I will be with thee, and I'll bring thee again to this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. Now, I'm going to read something into that, which I believe is there all the time. And that is this, that he had been in a home where God was honored. But he had thought of him evidently as a god of that home, and that's as far as his power and his interest extended. Now out here in the wilderness, the first night away from home, he's brought face to face. He says, God is in this place. I didn't know him. And there's the unfolding of God to him in a way that enabled him to go further than he intended to before he started out, that I'm sure of. Verse 17, he was afraid and said, how awful is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Now, it's interesting to notice this expression, the house of God. It was a wilderness. It was an open place. There was no building here. So we have to dismiss from our minds the idea of a house in which to worship God. Now, listen, I have no truck with those people who go off on Sunday and say, I can worship God out in the open. Instead of coming to church, I can go out in the open and worship God, to worship the God of nature. Well, I don't think they do. I think they have other things that occupy their minds, but that's his excuse. Now, we're not talking about that. This here is a consciousness coming over this man that God was here. Now, you remember when we read the story, I changed one word, and that's in verse 13, and behold, the Lord stood above it, and I said that it should be beside it. Now, I am beside you, I am with you, says the Lord. And that's what it means here, that he was going to be with him. He said, the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. So we go on to see that Jacob dedicated this place to the Lord. He called it Bethel, the house of God. This is coming up again in a moment, but with some addition. But then he made a vow, and I'm going to ask you to look again at verses 20 and 21 of chapter 28. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way, that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. This stone that I have set for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that thou shall give me, I will surely give a tenth unto thee. It looks to me like a little bit of a bargain going on here again. If you're going to do this for me, if you'll do this, then I'll do something. And it reminds me of what the devil said about Job on one occasion. Doth Job serve thee for naught? You touch him in his family, in his finances. You touch him in these things, and you'll find out that there's been a real reason why God is serving. There's an ulterior motive behind it. Well, Job triumphed in that particular case, but here is Jacob using a similar thought here that he was dickering with God. All right? Now, We leave that scene and we get him down into Haran. He meets with the family down there, Laban. He meets with Rachel, you remember, at the well. He falls in love with her at first sight almost. And you know the rest of the story. He wanted Rachel and the Laban, another one of this tribe. He makes the deal. He says, you serve me for 7 years and you can have Rachel. And just as Jacob had been the deceiver, so it was meted out to him again, and he was deceived. The night after the wedding, he found he had another woman, Rebecca, and that Laban had deceived him. So there was the bargain made for another 7 years, if he would have Rachel. And so for 14 years, he served Laban. It seems to me that it wasn't once, but more than once, that Jacob thought, well, the hens have come home to roost. Don't you think so? Doesn't somebody say somewhere in the New Testament, be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also be. If some of us Christians today want to know why some things are happening, perhaps this may be the answer. I'm thinking that there are so many Christians today, and I would include myself amongst them, who are more of a Jacob than anything else. This old fleshly nature that we've been talking about so much is still here. So Jacob finds himself deceived, and yet for the love that he bore for Rachel, doesn't love Leah. He takes this to the Lord, and I'm not going into the details there, but then something else happened. Jacob sends out somebody to go and see. He's getting tired of Laban and his trickery, his treachery, because it went beyond this. You remember the deal with the cattle and how Jacob outsmarted Laban? Can't go into that, but the matter of fact was that Laban had made such a deal that by such a deal, Jacob couldn't possibly get a good flock or get a good herd, whereas Laban could. But evidently, Jacob knew enough about cattle that he got around that, and he had more flock than Laban. And the intensity between them increased until at last he said, I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here. Now, an interesting thing came up, you remember, that after they had left Laban, and had gone away, that Laban found out that he'd gone. And there's another little bit of trickery that some of us resort to. Jacob never left that place until Laban had gone on a journey. He got to some farmer's conference or some cattleman's conference, and while Laban was away, Jacob hightailed it out of there with his crowd. And then when Laban came back, he went after Jacob. Now here's the thing, you remember that when they got together and they had it out, as it were, then it was decided that they would call this place what? What was the name of the place that they called? Huh? We have societies named after. What is this expression? The Lord watch between thee and me while we are absent one from the other. Ever heard of that? The Mizpah class. All right. Well, that's been taken out of context. What we mean today by that in these Mizpah classes and this expression is, the Lord bless you while you're absent from me. Bless them. But what it is, that was a monument set up, and the Lord was to watch that neither of them crossed that valley. The Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent one from the other. Jacob didn't trust Laban, and Laban didn't trust Jacob. They set this thing up to keep them separate. All right, it goes on until the messenger comes back that this man Esau is already on the way with an army in order to slay Jacob. Then Jacob really gets worried. Now we go over to the 32nd chapter just quickly. I'm not going to have time to deal with all this morning, I'm sure. But I must deal with this. Genesis 32, verses 24 to 32. When Jacob heard that Esau was on his way, you remember how first of all he sends his flock across Gabbok, And after he sent all his flocks across, he sends his family across. And if you'll notice the way he sends his family over, it's interesting. And then in verse 24, and Jacob was left alone. Jacob was left alone. And there wrestled with him a man until the breaking of the day. When he saw that he prevailed not against him, that is, when the angel saw that he prevailed not against Jacob, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." How would you say that? If you were dramatizing this thing, how would you say that? You'd have to say it as the words of a desperate man. He wrestled with this angel all night long. And now the angel says, "Let me go." But I'm not. But I imagine that with panting breath, "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." He's a desperate man. There's issues at stake here involved. And he'll not let go. And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." Now I disagree, and I'm just going to bring this in. The time is gone. But you have a footnote in your companion Bible. Those of you that own it, you've got a little footnote against the word prevail. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it in essence anyway. Because it finishes up by saying this. The word itself means, according to the companion Bible, succeeded. He succeeded. He had contended for the birthright and had succeeded. He had contended for the blessing and succeeded. He had contended with Laban and succeeded. He had contended with men and succeeded. Now he contends with God and failed. I don't agree with that. He contended with God and succeeded, it says. Read it again in that verse. And about the prevailing. And you'll see just what it says. And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince thou hast power with God and with men. And hast what? Succeeded." And God blessed him from that moment, because the whole thing changed, you remember, because he met with Esau and there was a reconciliation. But the great thing here is this sort of Peniel, the place where this happened. And then one more thought, and I'll have to leave it for this morning. Turn to chapter 35, will you please? Chapter 35. And isn't it tragic that I've said all this and yet I've got all the morals and the lessons to leave for next Sunday? You will have to come back. Not one of you better be absent next Sunday. Now, I'm not a Jacob that I've schemed and planned it this way. I've just run out of time. But listen to this last thought here. In chapter 35, 1 to 29. Now, we can't take all that in. I hope I've got the right chapter again. Just a moment. Yes. It's this idea of Bethel when he comes back. We find that Jacob called the name of the place by another name. I haven't got the reference right, so I'll just have to give it to you. The name that he gave it the second time when he came back to Bethel, where he had said, "This is the house of God," he renamed it. He called it El Bethel. What does that mean? The God of the house of Bethel. Yes, the house of bread or whatever it was. Don't you see the difference? Now it's no longer the house of God. That's what I wanted to say. It's no longer the house of God. Now it's God himself. The God of the house of God. Have you found the verse, someone? Verse what? 7? Thank you. And he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. Now listen, what is this lesson so far as we've gone? That Jacob has been transformed. This experience of Peniel, I may deal with this a little more fully next week. But this was the breaking down of a man. This was the breaking down of the old man. He parted with all that he'd labored for 14 or more years. 20 years he'd labored for it. He parted with it. It went on before. And at that time he didn't know what God was going to do. He didn't know what Esau's
but that Esau would change in his attitude. He had said goodbye to this. This was a peace offering, if you like. And then he had sent his families across. And he sent them across, I believe, in the order of his affection until the last one to go over was Rachel. Now, beloved, listen to it. You've got to part with, in spirit, if not in actuality, with everything. Talk about a full surrender. This is it. And the way we give up is exactly the way Jacob gave up. We give up that which is the least value to us first. Reminds me of what David said on one occasion. Shall I give to the Lord that which cost me nothing? Then the little more went, and the little more went, and the most precious thing of all went, till he was left alone with God. There God back. Now there may be someone here this morning, I know not, but there is just this bare possibility that we haven't surrendered all, and there is this need to get to the place where even we'll be willing to lay, as it were, before the Lord, all that is precious to us until we are left alone with him. And then God will bless. The tide will be turned. And the blessing will start. Now, next week, I want to draw some of the lessons with regard to Esau and Jacob. The lessons which have to do with this nature of ours that needs to be dealt with. And we shall see that these events, Bethel and denial and the return to Bethel, are just the way that God would have us to come. Listen, beloved. Where did you leave God? That's where you'll find. Just one more word, because this is precious. But what about this intervening time between the time that you left Bethel and the time that we hope that you'll trustfully come back? What about all these mistakes? What about all these sorrows, these tragedies? You're looking at them perhaps in your own life this morning and saying, can I ever forget? Can God ever forgive? You can forget, and you can have God's forgiveness. Those of us that feel that we perhaps have made mistakes, and life isn't what it ought to be and what it should be, it's not hopeless. Thank God there is the God of Bethel this morning waiting. And he'll deal with you as he dealt with Jacob, for that's our name, until it changed. And every child or every believer, I think, has a changed name when they come to Christ. I was lamb born in the flesh. I am a Christian in the spirit. So we pray. Sanctify our Father to our good and thy glory. For we're asking it for the honor of Christ. And in his name we beseech. Amen.